Yo, peeps, it's a Monday. I'm here, which rarely happens.
On a Monday, rarely.
But I'm here.
You are.
It is Monday, the 4th of March. March, of course, letter H for you playing our home game in the futures world.
Yeah.
It's funny because, sorry, Amanda. Yesterday, I was flipping around. It was one of those days. And I saw the movie Wall Street on. And just as I turned it on, it was when Bud Fox was saying, buy me 20 March gold or something like that.
Where was gold in 87?
Well, it didn't matter because there is no March gold contract, which was interesting. And we used to always kid around back in the day, you know, buy me 20 March
gold. Where was gold back then? You were trading gold in 87 when that
probably
movie or 88.
400
or
so. I'd have to go back and look.
Fair enough.
Anyway, but that's not what we're here to talk about. It's Monday. It's a Carter Braxton Worth day. Yeah, waiting in the wings. He's feeling much better.
Played and hurt last week.
He was.
Yeah.
Speaking of playing hurt, that's what a hockey player does. They play hurt. Right. And this is trade deadline week.
Yes, I've heard it from you.
Friday at 3 p.m. is the deadline. So I think you're going to start seeing some moves in earnest. You actually saw some moves over the last week. As you know, Calgary made a move. And then we're going to see what happens. Anyway, how are you?
So just to be very clear, people, if you don't see Guy Adami at some point in the future on CNBC's Fast Money or Market Call or On the Tape podcast,
it's because somebody traded for me.
No, it's likely that you have become a GM of the like an NHL team or something like that. Because I know that's your dream job. That's your dream job.
I emailed Glenn Sather years ago, and he emailed me back. And if you think I'm making it up, we'll put it in the effing show notes.
Okay.
Just as an FYI.
What, just the email or what was the conversation?
About some moves they should make.
Oh, really?
And he was totally with me.
Okay.
And by the way, since you went down this road and not I.
Yeah.
I emailed the Ranger organization, their brain trust, years ago, saying it's a friggin' sin that John Rattel's number wasn't retired. As a matter of fact, it wasn't just John Rattel. Vic Hadfield and Brad Park. Well, guess what happened?
They retired.
They retired John Rattel's number. They retired Vic Hadfield's number. And I don't know what the hell they're waiting for with Brad Park, who was probably the second best defenseman in NHL for an 8 to 10 year period. Number one, of course, being Bobby Orr. Let's go to the rundown.
Let's do it. What are we
right going? Behind me.
There we go.
Oh, we're doing it on the screen now. I don't say that. Trade coming undone. The thing that I won't say, trade is coming undone. You can say it if you want. Cautionary tale for chip stocks, maybe. And Carter Worth, who I mentioned, he's going to chart some yields, which went up to 430, down to 418, 422. Yields are trying to, like myself, yields are trying to figure
it out. Let's talk about this because, again, the Mag 7 thing is kind of interesting to me. Just by the way, I am fairly certain that we, as a group on Fast Money, we nicknamed it Mag 7, not Magnificent 7, because Mel hated that name. She thought that it suggested that these stocks and these companies and their products and the people who manage them and this were somehow magnificent, and she didn't like that. And I said, let's just call them the Mag 7.
Okay, so let's back up for a second. It's Monday, right? So we have a whole week.
That was months ago.
The first iteration of this entire thing was Fang. You remember this, right?
Yeah.
And then you came along, I want to say in 2018.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
September-ish. September of 18. And you said, no, it's not Fang. It's MAGA. Like you had this epiphany.
Yeah.
I don't know what letter it starts with, but you had one.
Yeah.
And then oddly enough, months later, then President Donald Trump had one of those big yellow legal pads and he was scrolling on
Sharpie.
It. And he said, you know, it just came to my attention that MAGA has all these four stocks now of $1 trillion market cap. Remember this?
Microsoft,
whole thing?
Apple, Google
and the Apple.
You know, he's a big fan of mine, as you know.
I'm just saying.
And so
it's funny, though.
Yeah.
And you know that somebody got
well,
in his
Mel
ears.
Did not like. And by the way, if you guys are big Melissa Lee fans.
Wait a second. It's
who's not?
Who's not?
Okay. We have a very special treat. Right after this show, Melissa's coming in here to sit down with me and you.
Stop.
That conversation is going to be on the tape podcast that drops on Friday in your favorite podcast store.
She's coming here?
Yeah. She's coming here.
She's coming to our turf.
This is a big surprise. Yeah. So, and we're asking the questions. You're going to say, I'm asking the questions.
I'm asking
sister.
The questions now. Sit down.
All right. So that's going to happen. So I think we started calling it the Mag 7. And right now, it is just the Fab 4. On this day, I mean, this is pretty shocking when you think about it. So Apple and Google are now down about 13% each from their all-time highs just made in the last month or so. Tesla is getting absolutely destroyed today on news out of China. And that's obviously been more than cut in half. I guess it was $400 in late 2021. So when you look at that, you would say to yourself, wow, there's some stuff going on here. The NASDAQ is basically unchanged. The S&P, which also closed at an all-time high on Friday, unchanged. What do you make of this guy? Because and we got to obviously get Carter in a second here. This is kind of, look at that. I mean, yeah. You know, one dog goes one way, the other dogs go the other way.
For me.
Yeah.
So again, we play this game and we might've done it on the show. If I had told you the following was going to happen 100%, and then, okay, guy, then tell me where the S&P is going to be. So if, in other words, if I had said, listen, Apple's going to be trading in the mid 170s down from 199 and change. Google would have put in a double top. You're showing serious weakness in Tesla yet again. Where's the S&P 500? I said, I don't know, maybe if it's lucky, 4,600, if not lower. Because for a long time, I was of the belief, clearly and correctly, that as Apple went, sort of the broader market's going to go as well. The S&P is within three handles of an all-time high. Yeah. The all-time high was 5140, mentioned in NASDAQ. So that's not playing out. So what's going on? Well, the Apple, to me, at least makes sense. Like Apple, in terms of their growth, their valuation, it makes sense that it's selling off. And there are a number of other things that are contributing to that. And now, technically, we are through that moving average that we talked about for a while. We've had the conversation. Traded down in October, bounced. Traded back down, bounced. Traded back down again, held. Now it's through, breaking down. I don't know, maybe the October lows-ish or something like that are in play. But what it's become, apparently, is a source of funds. So people are getting out of Apple, and that money is making its way into the names that you were just talking about. So that's what I think. Right, I'm not saying I'm right.
No, you are right, because it's pretty obvious what's going on. So people are selling Google and Apple and Tesla for stock-specific reasons. But look at this. All right, so let's pull up Intel today. Okay, so Intel on the day, I think when I looked on the opening, it might have been up 0.5%. And what happened on the opening is that Taiwan Semi gapped up 4%, NVIDIA gapped up 3%. They're all higher. At one point, Intel was almost unchanged. So the money coming out of those other things is trying to find new ways to play the semi trade. Now, you've made this point on many occasions. Intel could end up being a great sleeper play. When you think about their manufacturing capability, you think about Taiwan Semiconductor, they have 90% of the high-end graphics chips manufacturing. Like, people are going to want to diversify for geopolitical reasons, but for a whole host of other reasons. So maybe Intel is a good one. I'm just saying it's important to recognize the behavior. AMD, really quickly, it's on a runaway breakout. We've talked about this one over the last few days. Look at what's going on there. Doesn't seem particularly sustainable. No. And then look at Taiwan Semi. I want to look at a five-year chart.
Thank you for that, Taiwan Semi. Okay. You're so in my head.
All right, go ahead.
Well, no.
Then just do it.
No,
Well, I'm just saying. So look at this thing. So there's clearly a bubble that is broadening out right now. Okay. So the broader it gets, you could say the more damage it has the potential when it finally bursts, if you will. But thoughts on all of that, guy? Because, like, literally, other than semis, there's not a lot of exciting things going on in tech, in my opinion, right now.
Taiwan Semi is a story today. I'm glad you brought it up. Because this chart right here, you look at those prior highs. The first high, like many things, this was happened to be, I think, in February of 2021, the first high. The next high, I want to say, was like in January of 22, thereabouts. And now here we are, basically pushing right up against those levels as well. Big volume day, traded up to 141.99, 142 basically. It's given a little bit back. Big volume day as well. Let's see how this thing closes, because Carter will say probably correctly, there's no such thing as a triple top. Well, we're looking at potentially at one here. And then you talked about those other names. I mean, the money flows into these names are staggering. And I think it's become somewhat indiscriminate, because quite frankly, AMD, which reported, I think on January 31st, I think it was a Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, we were in Florida. That earnings report was not good. I want to say the stock closed around 168. In the after hours, it was trading 163. It should have been a lot lower. And now here we are off to the races, making a new all-time high. So there's a lot of interesting things going on. And it really comes down to just money flows to me.
All right, last thing. Let's look at this Supermicro. And again, it's very clear. This company has exposure on the packaging front, like it has exposure, right? And when you look at what Dell said last week, and you looked at the way the stock performed or whatever, this stock is up 1,000% in 1 year. It was just announced that it's going into the S&P 500. You see that gap that was on Friday afternoon. It's now a $64 billion market cap company. All right. So here's the deal. You tell me, if you're an S&P 500 indexer and you have to buy this stock up 1,000%, okay, in 1 year, and you have to put it in the S&P 500. I don't give a shit because, again, you're just buying an index of 500 stocks. How do you think this is going to play out for investors in the S&P 500? You think it's going to be additive from here, or you think it's going to be a detractor? All right, the other thing is pull up Tesla. Okay, in December or November, I think it was, when the stock was like 232, it was announced that it was going to go into the S&P 500. Remember that guy?
I do.
Look what the stock did. Okay, go back to 2020 here. It had that huge ramp. Huge ramp, okay? Became the next $1 trillion. Here, put your cursor over there because it's all the way down there near that moving average in the bottom. I remember it right down there, okay? So think about that, all right? 2020, and then it goes up, and then it ultimately doubles, and it goes to $400. And what has it done since then? It's been cut in half. Not great for the S&P 500.
Well, and yes, years after, right. I mean, it took a while to play out, but no, not particularly great. And it's interesting, this super micro chart. I mean, this, not again, not that it matters and not that anybody cares. This was a $300 stock in the beginning of January of this year. So you talk about parabolic moves. Now, people say, you know what, valuation, it's not ridiculous. People can say whatever they want. When you see a move of this magnitude from 300 to 1100 over the course of basically 2 months, I mean, that to me, that does not reek of a healthy market. It reeks of a market now. You know, can people say we're not at the exuberance level? Well, you look at a bunch of stocks. I mean, I don't know what else this is but exuberance.
This, all right. So, and this is what makes a market. Okay. And so this is not a criticism. This is somebody that I think a lot of folks think is far more credible than me as a market participant. But Jim Cramer this morning on his morning note said the S&P shuffles comes as the Wall Street Journal says club name NVIDIA. So that means it's in his investment club is a bubble. He said, gee, thanks. NVIDIA's adds 2% to its more than 85% or 65% increase so far this year. Despite the stock price surge, I think NVIDIA is among the cheapest and most undervalued of the Super Six. So to me, Jim's long. Jim's been on the story for a while, and he still thinks it's super cheap and can go much more. I just feel that it might look cheap based on the estimates, you know what I mean, that are out there right now. I just feel like all that is in the stock. And the moment, like, I can't believe that people thought that 10% Pete and that 10% raise, okay, was enough to cause the stock to go from, you know, where it did. But at some point, when it's 2% beat and a 2% raise,
well, that's what we've been talking about.
What do you think is going to happen to this stock?
Well, and what do you think, margin's going to stay at 77%? Right. And the point that we've made, and it's interesting because I think Dan Niles was on our show with us and we asked him the question about, yeah, on one metric, price to earnings, it's actually relative. It's, you can make a cogent argument that it's okay. Of course, price to sales, nobody in their right mind can think it's, I don't think so. Now, $2 trillion to $100 billion, maybe it's going to do 125. You can do the math. I mean, this is trading anywhere between 17 and 20 times revenue. And the disconnect there is, you know, they're basically outkicking their coverage, right? They're out-earning their revenue, which is great. But when that stops, and it, I'm telling you, that will stop, that's when things move in a very, you think it's a dramatic move to the upside, which it has been. I mean, that's when things start getting really interesting to the downside.
Yeah, and just to put a bow on it, we started this whole conversation by talking about Apple is now in correction story territory. Google is in correction territory. Tesla's in an all-out crash. I mean, let's be clear. And there was an article, I think, in the Journal that was talking about over the weekend how, obviously, NVIDIA has replaced, and NVIDIA slash AI has replaced Tesla slash EVs as the craze, right? And so to me, like, we know how this ends, people. Like, maybe... have at it. It's probably going to a nice round number of 1,000. Okay. It's going to get to $2.5 trillion or whatever the thing is. You know what I mean? But at some point, it will get cut in half. And Guy and I made this point this morning. I mean, listen, we show up every day. There's a tremendous amount of momentum. There's a lot of people making a lot of money in these things. If you know how to take a profit and you know how to cut losses, these are tremendous trading vehicles because the pattern has been really simple. They gap up. And then you ride them to the highs and then they gap up the next day. And you know what I mean? Like, so have fun with it, but just know how to trade and take a profit and cut your losses when it starts going the other way.
And listen, 100% people say, have you been too cautious or too 100%. There's no denying that that's the absolute truth. I've been absolutely too pessimistic and too cautious. What my concern has been and what my concern will continue to be is, more people are going to wind up losing money in these stocks, I think, than making money. To your earlier point, because when it turns, everybody says, well, I'm going to wait for the bounce. And the problem with these turns is that you never see them coming. They're seemingly out of left field. and they give you no opportunity to wait for the bounce. And nobody ever takes advantage of the bounce because, again, a lot of times you think, okay, that was the bottom. We're back up on the train again. So we'll see. And as Doug Kass just said,
oh, this is a good one.
Bob Farrell's number three rule of investing: there are no new eras. Excesses are never permanent. I mean,
all right, but here's the other thing that Doug put in that email too, and Doug writes on realmoney.com. So obviously, you know, Doug is texting us throughout our show here, and we like to relay his messages because he's forgotten more about the stock market than I may never ever know here. But so you can subscribe to Real Money and get Doug's stuff. But this was from Jesse Livermore. This is from Reminiscence of a Stock Operator, brilliant book. A lesson I learned early is that there's nothing new on Wall Street. There can't be, because speculation is as old as the hills. Whatever happens in the stock market today has happened before and will happen again. That seems like something Carter Braxton Worth might say. Should we bring him in?
We should. So bring him in real quick, by the way, and we're going to talk about yields, Carter. We're going to talk about a lot of things. So as we see your pretty face, and I'm glad you're feeling better.
I am.
Name Joe Bostic that played for the Washington Redskins.
Yeah.
He had epic battles with the New York Giants, specifically Lawrence Taylor. Rafael Bostic is a Fed person. So let's put this little full screen up in terms of what this Fed president seems to think. He's from Atlanta, of course. And he's saying, you know what? Interest rate cut penciled in for the third quarter, be followed by a pause. So here's another one they trot out just to talk about it. And the point we're making here in terms of Fed rate cuts, now a lot of people really backing off to that six cuts. I think that's sort of in the rearview mirror. Now we're down to probably three, and he sees it happening in the third quarter, followed by a pause, Carter, which I find to be interesting. Carter Worth, how are you?
How are you? Good, good. Yeah, I mean, first NVIDIA, I mean, look, there's no telling when you're in a parabola, right, how far it can go, but we know how they end. And no one has any answer on this one, just to be clear, right? I mean, if you looked at all the analysts that are responsible for this stock, and what they were saying in the beginning of the year, just hours ago, we're only a couple months into the year, earnings this year were supposed to be $18. Now they think they're going to be $23. A year ago, if polled, you could ask them, because they published it, what is your earnings estimate for the current year that we're in? They said $4 for NVIDIA. Now they say it's $23. What it means is this: they're simply reacting to price, right? The price goes up, they move their price target up. It beats again, so they have to raise their estimate again. They're after the fact. They're not predicting facts. They're reporting on them and adjusting their own. And guess what? It's the same with interest rates. So what you just said, Guy, was what? That six cuts were anticipated and now not? Isn't that the opposite of, and we can look at a rate chart, higher for longer? And then not. Whatever's happening at the time, well, that's the flavor of the day. So we know that in October, we crossed 5%. It was a mantra. It was as big a mantra as BRIC or MAGA or Magnificent Seven or what's the higher for longer. It was a mantra. Guess what happened? The exact opposite. It drops from 5 to 3.8. Down at 3.8, oh, six cuts. Eight cuts. It was all very frothy. And now they're abandoning that. It's just, there's no prediction involved. It's just words. It's a word salad reporting on what's happening without any analysis at all.
Let's go through your charts, because I think you believe the uptrend in yields that we broke, that uptrend, we broke it, we retested the uptrend, and you think we're going to fail here, which suggests that yields are going to go lower. So walk us through your charts, Carter.
Sure. So a chart here that you see, we have four, I have nothing on it. Let's put something on it. There's the trend line. Let's flash it. And so let's flash that trend line. Yeah, I mean, that is a breaking trend. It is a throwback to the underbelly of the trend line, and it's struggling there. If we put the horizontal line on, this, now remember, that looks, one could say that's just a random line. It's not. That line is what? Connecting the October high. What is the October high? It's the low in the S&P. That's the structural low. When the S&P was 27% off its high and the NASDAQ 100 was 37%. At that point, that's when people were extrapolating again. Rates will go higher and higher. The market will go lower and lower. None of that happened. Anyway, put the lines all together. My hunch is that, you know, you're at a very difficult level here, and that one is or should be a buyer of bonds.
Yeah. And Carter, those charts, I mean, it's pretty definitive here. Obviously, a breakout above that, uptrend that was support, now resistance, and then that breakout level, the horizontal line. If you had a breakout above that, you got to have to reevaluate. But to me, I see what you've done there, and that makes perfect sense. And so the idea would be, at this point, lower yields means, like, let's say higher TLT, maybe they want to pull that one up. We could look at some levels there. But again, you see that 150-day moving average, it's kind of right up against that. So maybe we'll look at a TLT, a long play, the next time we have Carter on with us later on in the week. But I want to pull up this other chart, because this is the opposite, or at least the way a lot of people think about the direction of yields. And you just mentioned about the stock market here. We have strategists who are doing much of the same as far as their targets coming in the year. I think consensus was around, I don't know, 5,000 mm-hmm. or the average or so heading into it. It's still about that. So we see Savita over at B of A. We see UBS change their targets. Is it multiple expansion? Is it greater confidence in S&P 500 earnings? Like the quality of those earnings, the kind of broadening out of those earnings. We read a stat in Q4. I think it was from Bloomberg Intelligence this morning on the Tape podcast, that I guess almost 60% of the earnings growth in the S&P 500 in Q4 came from the Mag 7. X the Mag 7, the other 493 saw a 1.5% drop or something on the quarter. So it's not that healthy of a market any way you want to look at it. Carter, talk to us about the relationship between, let's say you're right on yields, they start going lower. Can they go lower for the right reasons that are supportive of equity valuations?
I wonder. I mean, look, this is a very low cost of capital, right? In any other environment, 10-year money at 4.25, it should be nirvana. It's literally, if you can't borrow money at 4.5% and do something better with it than that, then one should get out of the business, get out of any risk asset of any kind. But the question is always about not the current level, but what's anticipated. And that was sort of the point I'm making. When we were above 5, anticipating higher. When we dropped to 3.8, people anticipating lower. At this point, the truth is, for about 2 years now, rates have been at 4%. And maybe they don't do what I'm thinking, which is lower or higher. And we just continue to stay in this remarkably benign rate environment, because that's what it is.
What's that show that I never watched before?
Seinfeld.
And what's one of the guys, one of the lines is, when if that, what's the important guy, Jerry?
Jerry, yeah. Jerry Seinfeld.
When he does something smart, he says, like, that's gold, Jerry?
No.
Doesn't he say something like that?
No, there's a guy named Banyan who's like a...
Banyan?
Banyan, who's another comedian, and he just looks up to Jerry, and he thinks Jerry's the man. Uh-huh. And every time Jerry, like, makes a joke, you know, even when he's not on stage,
right,
that's gold, Jerry.
That's gold. Banyan.
Banyan.
Named after
Banyan.
A tree.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's go to gold, because we have our chart and then we have some Carter's charts.
Good segue, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, everybody loves this Seinfeld person. I figure if you mention him, the algorithm picks it up.
The YouTube algorithm picks up the...
And then they automatically... That's gold. Because isn't that how it works?
Gold, guy. That's gold.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, here's the way we look at gold. You had that huge move to the upside. That was a Sunday night. And obviously, it took a lot of people out back, as they say. And then subsequently, the move lower was dramatic. But we've gone sideways, Carter, ever since. In a rate environment, the rates have gone up, rates have gone down, dollar's gone up, the dollar's gone down. But gold's hanging in there like a champ, and it's having a day-to-day. So that's our chart. Let's take a look at yours, because you have some views on this as well.
We just did a note this morning just saying we don't have any right there on the screen, it says we have no new thoughts. We get a lot of inquiries. And so all we did was pass along the December report, and it talks about what is a measured move. Gold has been in this range, or at the top of this range, for 3 years, and it's been toying with the prospects of a breakout. And it still is not free and clear of this range, but the important thing to note that if and as it is able to break out, that's our view. The real question is, well, how high does it go? Does it go up 1% or 4%? And while there is no known answer to that, there are some tools to use. And one of them is something called a measured move. Yeah, you can look it up in any technical analysis book that you might have. You can Google it on the internet. But the general principle of a measured move, and it's not specific to gold, it's for any asset, that is in a range. And that when you do start to exceed that range, break out, you take the width of the range in which it was trading, and then you project that or measure that up above. And so a measured move here really implies 25, 50 an ounce. And that's not such a big thing here. We're at 20, almost 2,100. But the point is, I think all paths point to higher prices. And if you look at the recent action, whether it's in the REITs, or if you look at some of the tower stocks like AMT or CCI, but rate sensitive stocks, gold, of course, is in a way a rate sensitive instrument. The action would suggest that rates are headed lower.
Yeah.
All right. So quickly, here's one for you. Again, this is a bit of a curveball in spring trading. I'm sorry, but you're right. Percentage terms from current levels in gold, 2,500, 2,600 is not a big deal. I mean, we have stocks that are doing that over the course of a couple of weeks, seemingly every day across a wide variety of industries. I mean, even some industrial stocks. With that said, Carter, here's my question to you. Would gold signify something else, like a breakout in gold? Would have a lot of people's antennas up, like what the F is going on? Why is gold suddenly breaking out? So although in terms of percentage of move, maybe not a big deal, what it might mean to the marketplace might be an extraordinarily important move. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, hard to know. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people whose general thesis is that lower rates mean higher gold. Other people say, no, gold does best in times of high rates and hyperinflation. And there is no answer. Sometimes one is right, sometimes the other. But I think that's at least the beauty of having not to rely on the fundamentals, the why, because I'm not really in the why business. I'm in the what business. Just like, what the hell is Bitcoin? I don't know. But if you play a pattern, you play it for the reasons that you're playing it. If one believes there's a breakout, or one believes there's a rounding bottom, what I call a bearish to bullish reversal buy, then one goes with that premise and until proven wrong, or cut if wrong. That's what stops are all about. But what gold strength implies, I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to be a safe haven. And actually, if you were to look, and this is known, right, every instance where the S&P has dropped more than 20%, from an all-time high, gold, except for one time, has outperformed the market. And so gold is a hedge and it is a safety area, no question.
That, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, you mentioned Bitcoin, what some folks call nerd gold. It'll be interesting to see the correlation between Bitcoin, let's say in the NASDAQ, if it does sell off at some point, and then ultimately what gold does, the shiny metal, you know what I mean? Again, I just think that now that folks can buy spot Bitcoin ETFs in their Fidelity account in an IRA or something like that, might it start to transform a bit more to the way that people would get exposure to gold for all the reasons that a lot of folks have traditionally bought it. Now, it's up on a huge spike. It's just gone from 37 to 67,000 almost, you know what I mean, in a straight line over the last, you know, month and a half or so. So it seems a bit riskier, but I just wanted to make that point. Carter, really quickly, you know, you heard us talking about tech. You heard us talking about what's going on in the semi space. You had some charts, and I think you were on last week talking about the SOX, the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index, getting back to its relative highs from the year 2000 to the S&P 500. You had some charts on worth charting this morning. Just talk to us a little bit about, like, today, you know, to see, you know, Intel at one point was unchanged and now it's up 5.5%. NVIDIA is just getting stronger throughout the day. It's up more than 5% after gapping up 2%. The Supermicro is up 25%. It's going to the S&P 500. You know, you see what's going on here. You know, stocks like even Qualcomm have caught a bit. The Intel is really important if they want to throw that one up there again. On January 25th, when the company reported their Q4 results and guided for Q1, the stock gapped down 11% the next day. You see that, okay? So here we are today. It's people looking for, like, names, just figuring out whatever word salad, as you said before, they want to come up with why this should be a beneficiary of this bubble that's inflating. Talk to us about this relationship now with the SOX back at its 24-year relative high to the S&P and seeing this sort of behavior and seeing it, yeah, it's broadening out, but it's still really concentrated.
Yeah, I mean, one of the some of the original reports looking for a bit of strength in semis were about the fact that they still were so far behind the market, and that finally that has been reconciled. And so what you're looking at is a two-panel chart, very straightforward. On the top is the actual SOX index, and we know that it is up substantially from its dot-com peak. On the other hand, and this is what alpha is all about, the SOX ratio below this bottom panel is the SOX divided by the S&P, which depicts a relative strength line, a relative performance line. And last week, with Friday's very strong day, the SOX returned to its former relative high. Said differently, all losses relative to the S&P have now been recouped. It took 24 years, but they are now even with one another, which is to say, and this way, it's very dangerous buying into a parabolic move. And that is important. Look at that angle of that relative line in 99 and 2000 versus the line now. The line now is not a parabolic move in the sense that that was literally a parabolic move. And so the one thing to know, we might have a second chart here, is, and this is the real story, right? So let's go back to the first one. Again, now the semis have recouped, stated very clearly, all of their relative losses. They are now break even with the S&P for 24 years, having been behind the S&P since the dot-com peak. By comparison, take a look at the SOX's relative performance to the tech sector, a harder benchmark, not all S&P stocks, but things like Apple and NVIDIA. And of course, until they changed the nomenclature, Meta was in here and Google and so forth. Point being, do semis actually ever recoup all of their relative losses to the tech sector? One would say, yeah, if Apple keeps rolling and others, and maybe so. But the point is, it shows how much excess there was in semiconductors, not only, and this is important, in the 2000 era, but guess when the semiconductor index was founded? I mean, when it was inception date, it was 1994. Basically, semis have been underperforming this aggregate since they were born, so to speak, which is ironic.
You know, and I just real quickly, Carter, and I have a simple fundamental answer for that, because it's one of the most cyclical industries that exists in the entire world. And I think that's something that's kind of lost on people too, because people say, you know, well, Sam Altman's going to raise $7 trillion to buy high-end graphics chips because there is, you know, a massive supply constraint and blah, 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 blah. That's fine. Pretty soon it's going to be a glut. And pretty soon they're going to be discounted, you know what I mean, like crazy. And pretty soon there's going to be some reason why companies are not spending the way they were on somebody. You know, like, I know no one can see that now, and I'm not telling you to sit out of this thing, but when you just said it yourself, buying into a parabolic move, you know what I mean? There's no good way that that ends unless you are one of the most nimble of market participants. That's it. That's all. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I covered a few semis when I was a funny mental analyst. They used to do book to bill and all that stuff, or is that
sure.
out?
Sure.
Stick around for a second, Carter, because before we get out of here, Target, it's like one of the last major companies. Tomorrow morning before the bell, I think, according to FactSet, the average price target on this stock is about $158, which is, you know, within a couple percent of where we're currently trading. You see the implied move. Dan put this together, up to 164 on the upside, down to 141 on the downside. Implied move, basically 7.5%. I see that gap in the chart sticking out like a sore thumb. That's the gap higher from November of last year. I'm not suggesting we fill that tomorrow, but that's still out there. People will say valuation is still reasonable. They figured out their inventory problems. I get all those things. What I'll tell you, though, is, you know, we're getting to levels here where things are going to get really interesting, I think, Dan, really quickly. So before you leave here, Carter, thoughts on, again, you probably think it's probably a pair of twos here, and it probably is, but does that gap to the downside mean anything to you?
Yeah, it is a pair of twos. So it's had a big move. I mean, you're talking about it's up, what, 60% from the low, 50%? And yet, is it a particularly identifiable moment in time? The risk to being short, I would just say it that way, is that you get the second gap. And that's what happens when you have one surprise, typically you get a second. And the risk to being long is that somehow they're going to screw it up again. I would stay away from it. I just would not go in ahead of the number.
All right. Well, you know, it's funny looking at the options market, and that's how we've figured out that implied move. Let's just say you wanted to look out to April expiration, and let's just say that you thought there was another upside gap. You know, with the stock right here at like 151 right now, the April 150 call would cost you about $8.40. You can do the math on that. You know, that's about what, 5.5-6% of the stock price. I mean, that's not like, you know, that's a big nut right there. You know what I mean? The at the money straddle, you know, is, you know, $14-$15 or something like that. So, you know, looking a month out or so, and you have that event. I mean, this is a tough one to play with options. That's a high implied move just for this 1 week alone here. And I think, Guy, what you're saying is you're looking down and saying if they were to miss and guide lower, you think ultimately it's going to make its way back towards that gap.
Yeah. And I have no idea. I'm just interested to see if they truly have figured out their inventory problem, or given the fact that comps are probably going to be light, did that inventory problem, which reared its ugly head a couple of years ago, reemerge somehow? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not convinced that they figured it out. And quite frankly, their product mix does not really lend itself to the environment that we find ourselves in. It's much more conducive to a Walmart, which, by the way, which is now split, I think, what was it, 3-for-1, which is within, you know, an earshot of its all-time high. That's the place to be, but that's just me, Dan.
Yeah, all right. Well, listen, Carter, we covered a whole heck of a lot of ground.
Sure did.
We appreciate you coming back. We appreciate all your contributions to the Market Call. Thank you so much, bud. We'll talk to you.
And we're happy that he's feeling better.
Yeah, we are happy that he's feeling better.
Oh, by the way, I mentioned this. Oh, Carter's gone.
Yeah, he is.
But I mentioned on Friday when Carter was on CNBC's Fast Money.
Yeah.
Like, how do I not know this? He has a relative, you know, distant relative, signed the Declaration of Independence.
How did you not know
that? I don't know. I always thought it was a joke. Sense.
He actually used to do this really great Twitter post years and years ago. Might have been around July 4th something like that.
Typically.
Yeah. And he's just a straight shooter, that guy.
I'm reading an article.
While we're doing the show?
No, I just read.
Okay.
I'm going to read this.
Yeah.
Shares in NVIDIA Corporation surged nearly 8% today amid speculation that the graphics card company, remember that was when it was a graphic, I'm not telling you the date, was about to be purchased by giant chip maker Intel.
Yeah.
Stock rose $2.32 a share to hit $30.62 in the afternoon trading on the NASDAQ exchange. An Intel spokesman declined to comment on the rumors. Nothing from NVIDIA.
You want to know what year?
Give me the year.
I'm going to say 2006.
That's spot on, October 06. However, not every analyst shares belief. Some believe that NVIDIA's market cap of $10 billion would represent too high a price for Intel, which is currently in the cost-cutting spree.
Can you do the math? Like, what percent move right now
with
$2 trillion market cap? So you know why I remember that? So GPUs, graphic chips, were like the ugly redheaded stepchild of the
gamers.
Yeah. It was like back then. And, you know, there was a deal. Who bought ATYT? It might have been... That was a big NVIDIA competitor. So AMD, I think, bought ATYT around the same time in the summer of 2006. And so Intel tried to buy NVIDIA, and I can't remember what happened, but good on you, Jensen Huang.
Well, I mean,
good.
Amazing, right? Anyway, you. So that's that.
I just go back down to memory lane.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you, dog.
I want to thank Carter Braxton-Worth.
Of course you do.
Melissa Lee is coming here.
Yeah.
So we're going to drop that on Friday. That's the On the Tape podcast. You should listen to the OK Computer podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had a great conversation with Kara Swisher.
That was last week.
I know it was, but you can still listen to it. That's very evergreening.
And you know what you can do? She just wrote a book called Burn Book.
Burn Book.
Okay. And if you are one of the first next 100, because we already gave away 100
like that,
we're going to give away a free copy of her book. Go to the Apple Podcast Store, leave a review, follow OK Computer, that's OKAY, and send a screenshot of that to contact@riskreversal.com, and you'll get a free book. So we appreciate that. We're trying to get further engagement with our listeners. And
blow up Amanda's inbox.
And we want you to figure out what's going on with the OK Computer.
By the way, OK Computer, obviously a great song by Metallica.
It's not. It's an album by Radiohead. And it's a great album.
That's it for the On the Tape podcast. That's it for Market Call. That's it for OK. That's it for everything.
We're out. Drop the mic. We're done.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.
All right, bye.